This Augusta Golf Show podcast is brought to you by Gerald Jones Audi. Inspire design, where emotion takes shape. 4022 Washington Road in Martinez.
Here at Audi, we have some good news to share with the world. Unfortunately, our good news is bad news for our competition. So to soften the blow, we brought in the very best at delivering bad news. Someone's mom.
The Audi A4 is the biggest, fastest, most fuel-efficient car in its class. Oh, honey, I know it's hard to hear, but it'll be okay.
I'm David Jones, inviting you to test drive an impressive new Audi A4 Premium today at Gerald Jones Audi, 4022 Washington Road in Martinez, or visit us on the web at GeraldJonesAudi.com. Audi. Truth in engineering.
Well, Peter Kessler is a golf historian. He's worked at Golf Channel, the PGA Tour Network. He's got the number one podcast in golf with the Peter Kessler Show, available at revolutiongolf.com. We always talk to Peter after a major championship. It's a pleasure to welcome Peter Kessler back to the Augusta Golf Show. Hi, Peter.
I am delighted to be with you. It was wonderful to run into you last week at the tournament, and what an incredible week it was.
Well, you know, and it was great. I was surprised to see you. It was great to see you. It may not have had the drama of other Masters, but it was interesting. Wire to wire, records on the line. I guess the young face of American golf. What'd you make of it all? What did you make of this victory by Jordan Spieth?
You know, it's so funny. The tournament ends. He laps the field. He sets records at every single stage. It was one of the historic major championship wins of all time, going back to the first British Open. One of the most incredible wins, certainly a top tenner of all time. And then after the tournament's over, somebody like Gary Van Sickle from Golf.com writes, well, he's short and crooked. And then somebody else writes, well, he's not really great at any one thing. What are these guys watching? This kid is unbelievable. When it matters. When he misses a tee shot, he gets it back in play. When he gets it back in play, he gets it up and down. When it's an important tee shot, he puts it right down the middle. He hits the ball 300 yards, which makes him about 50th on tour, and 300 yards is just fine. He's never going to hit it as far as Rory McIlroy, but McIlroy's never going to have a short game as good as Jordan Spieth, so I see a really good rivalry coming down the road, and I think that Spieth's much more mature than McIlroy. I think he's much more consistent. And I thought that it was interesting in the sense that I never felt like it was over until it was really over.
Hmm.
I mean, even on the first hole on Sunday when Justin Rose poured that putt in first, I thought, wow, what a statement to make. And then Jordan pumped it in right on top of him. It was unbelievable. And then he birdied three with an incredible 25-foot putt. From 20 feet, this kid is unbelievable. And he loves those big breakers. It's funny, too, because Phil Mickelson's best putting is between 15 and 25 feet. Because somehow he imagines the appropriate line and speed on that distance putt. But inside of 15 feet, Phil is pretty atrocious. But inside of 15 feet, Jordan Spieth's really unbelievable too, just as good as he is from 15 to 25. I love the varied routines on the putting green. I like the way he talks to his golf ball. He almost swore when he said, dang it, the other day. I just think he is everything that we hoped would come along. You know, if the one thing in his arsenal is a little bit of a lack of distance, he makes up for it in other ways. I thought it was brilliant, and the guys who were chasing him were big names.
How important was that up and down on 18 Saturday evening?
Well,
I mean, that would have taken it to a three-shot lead.
It's funny, too, because that's where Greg Norman was.
Mm-hmm.
In 1986, when he was tied with Jack Nicklaus, and he blocked the four iron into almost exactly the same spot, and he tried to run it down the hill and ended up hitting it about 20 feet long and above the hole and had no chance to make four. And Spieth had those two big sprinkler heads to deal with, too, which were only a couple of feet from his intended landing point. If he hits one of those sprinkler heads, that ball goes over the green, and now you're looking at double bogey and a two-shot lead, or even a one-shot lead, perhaps. So it was stunning. I mean, it's a downhill chip. He hit it straight up in the air to a short-sided pin, was able to get it to settle down 8 feet from the hole, and then just as brilliantly, he made the putt. The chip's no good if the putt's no good, but the putt was good, so the chip was great. I thought it was extremely meaningful at the time. I don't have any doubt that he would have gone on to play well the next day. I don't think that would have shaken him to the core. It would have just been a bogey, and the end of the world wasn't ending. Yes, it was preceded by a double, and it was a particularly sloppy one, but everybody has their moments, and those were a couple of dicey situations he was in, and one of which he was able to pull off, and I thought it was absolutely stunning.
We are speaking with Peter Kessler, host of The Peter Kessler Show, available at revolutiongolf.com. You alluded to this. So you thought at some point Sunday, maybe early on, you thought he was catchable.
I did think he was catchable. You know, a lot of guys have taken decent leads into the last round at Augusta National and haven't done a very good job. Rory, four-shot lead with 9 holes to go just a few years ago. Greg Norman with a 6-shot lead with 18 holes to go. Guys have gotten into trouble on the back nine of Augusta National. I mean, you know, you go back to, say, 1937. Ralph Goudal is leading Byron Nelson by 6 shots. With 9 holes to play, and Byron starts the back nine, birdie, 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 eagle, and at the same time, Goudal was going the other way, and Byron just passed him in a heartbeat. So stuff can change really fast there, and I don't think 4 shots is a ton. Jordan's still 21. He's not infallible. You know, there's nothing that says that he can't let things slip a little bit. Greg Norman did it, but I think he's steelier than Greg Norman. He's more mature than the Rory McIlroy who threw away the 4-shot lead a few years ago. But yes, I thought it was a closer run thing than the score said, because we're at Augusta National, because Phil Mickelson's on his heels, Justin Rose is a U.S. Open champion, these are a couple of really quality guys behind him, and as Phil Mickelson said, you know, if Jordan stumbles, I want to be the one who's there. Now, Mickelson was, you know, praising Jordan after the tournament was over, but you know, he felt on Saturday night that he had a chance. If he could shoot a brilliant round and Jordan cracked just a little bit, Phil thought that he might be able to step through that door, and he might have had Jordan not been able to throw a pair of 70s at the field on Saturday and Sunday to secure the lead in the golf tournament.
You know, Phil told us that he wanted to be in the group ahead of Jordan and not in the group with Jordan. I find that hard to believe.
Well, it's because it's a complete lie. He of course you want to be in the final group with Jordan so that you can do what you're going to do in front of the person, and he has to watch it and can choke in front of you. Being in the other group, the only reason he said that was because he couldn't get into the final group, because Justin Rose birdied the final hole on Saturday to get into the final group on Sunday. It reminds me of 1996. Nick Faldo came to the 54th hole on Saturday afternoon knowing he needed a birdie to play with Greg Norman the next day, and he was so desperate to make a birdie, and he did make the birdie, and he talked about it for weeks afterward, how important it was to be in the last group so that you could be there to put the pressure on. He didn't want Greg to be scoreboard watching. He wanted Greg to be watching in person, and Mickelson wanted to be there in person too. That was just a lot of nonsense.
Good word. Better week. Phil finishing tied for second. Tiger finishing 72 holes.
Yeah, I feel like you're asking me to grade Tiger on a curve. You know, there's no absolutes anymore. I mean, it was great to have him back. He didn't hit a fairway on Sunday till the 13th hole. Swing still looks goofy to me. You know, he's still doing all the swearing and the spitting and blowing his nose in the grass and, you know, how he popped his wrist back into place. There's no such thing as doing that. And, you know, the whole thing has become such a melodrama now, you know, between the deactivated glutes and he's talking about myelin and the fact that you need 10,000 successful reps out of 50,000 reps to change your swing pattern. Oh, for goodness sake, he's won 14 major championships and almost as many golf tournaments as Sam Snead, and he's talking about being in between swings. It's all crazy. Nobody's ever spoken like this. It's like he drank his own Kool-Aid. Nobody's buying into it. Everybody thinks it's nonsense. And the performance, I thought, was under the circumstances of not having played for 9 weeks and showing us what he did 9 weeks prior, was a huge advancement. But he's supposed to be able to chip. He can't chip. but he can't chip. The world's the second greatest player in the history of the world can't chip. So you go fix the chipping. That had to be fixable. It couldn't be a permanent, problem. It had to be fixable, so he fixed it. But he forgot to fix the rest of his game. It's a complete disaster. And now, he's saying, we don't know when we're going to see him next. We may not see him until May at the Players' Championship, which is completely absurd. You can't play good golf if you don't play golf. Now, with Mickelson, I thought it was a wonderful performance. It was typical Phil, though. Great eagle, bogey. Brilliant birdie, bogey. I mean, it's this, for truly, one of the finer players ever to play the game, he can be the most disappointing. He's so wildly inconsistent. He never has more than two or three good weeks in an entire 52-week year. I mean, that's the incredible thing about Phil. Literally, his whole career has been built around 1, 2, or 3 weeks a year since 1990. He's never been the player of the year. He's never won the most tournaments. Never. He's never done anything like that. Never been the leading money winner, because he's wildly inconsistent. And I guess he got jacked up from the Masters, and it's a course that he seems to play particularly well no matter what the circumstances. And I think he can continue to contend there for another 5 years. I think he could even win another green jacket in the way that Nicklaus won a final green jacket. Phil's capable of that, I think.
I always have to say this to you. If you want me to keep calling you, I'm going to need you to voice an opinion every once in a while.
I'm trying to break out of my shell.
He is Peter Kessler, most popular podcast in the game, The Peter Kessler Show on RevolutionGolf.com. Great to see you last week, Peter. Thank you for doing this. We'll talk again soon.
You're the best in the business, and I'm always thrilled to be with you.